All right, Nick Sparks, how you doing, buddy?
Not bad. Joshua Pellis there. How about yourself?
Got to get the full name saying out of the way here. Pretty good. I wanted to get on a call with you today because I wanted to talk to you about a lot of things and explore sort of getting your opinion. And I'm going to release this interview to the people who have seen a lot of my stuff and have really learned a lot over the past several, the past at least the past month. From me. And I wanted to get you on the horn here because I think that you have a lot of stuff that you can say in a way that I've never heard anyone else say it. And a lot of concepts to teach and that I've never heard before and that I've been fortunate enough to be a part of some of the things that you've been doing.
Goodness.
And it's been very, very beneficial for me and I think for a lot of other people that have been through the programs and everything. So I wanted to get you on because I think you have a massive amount of value in your opinions and in your thoughts, sort of to give to people. So, are you okay? Sounds like you're struggling with the microphone there.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm perfect. I'm so taken aback by your kind words that I was blushing. I was, just shaking a little bit. I was there
Vomiting.
in New York. I was very beclumped. So, thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it,
Yeah, of
Josh.
course.
It's a pleasure to be here and just talking with you about this stuff. I always enjoy thoroughly. So, yeah, thank you for having me.
Cool. So, recently I did an interview with another guy named Carlos Zuma. Do you know Carlos at all?
I am, I've never really met Carlos. I've only by reputation heard good things about the gentleman.
Yeah, he's got a great reputation, I think, for a really good reason. And I think because of the same reasons, that's sort of why I have you in the call now too. And I have this integrity filter. People aren't with an integrity, then obviously I don't want to interview them and introduce them to people who I know. Who I really care about, who are like my people, who are in my movement,
Sure.
So I'm really selective about it. But ultimately, I wanted to get on this call because I wanted to ask you several your ask your expert opinion on several things, and see how see what you have to say about it, and sort of let people understand what it is that you do know. But first, I have a question. Getting into this now that you're professional, you've been doing this for a while. Only this, and only been doing this for a living, which is kind of nuts, I know, because I've been doing the same thing.
Sure.
But what was sort of, what did you say was your biggest struggle getting from, random guy, you remember the guy you used to be, before, it's the same guy, but, different part of you before, you were afraid to really be who you truly are, I'm guessing, because I know you now, and I can't imagine that you were always like this and bad with women. So, what was sort of the biggest struggle for you from being, quote unquote, and I totally don't mean this the way it might sound, but being sort of a regular guy, because there's no such thing, to becoming, at the level of mastery that you're at now, what was the biggest struggle that you had?
Well, mastery is a strong word. I like to think that I might start reaching around that point when I'm 40, but I'm not. Still young,
Okay.
and I'm still a kid who just found some dynamite and is learning to play with it.
Right.
But that's a really good question, and it's the thing that it brought to mind. If I could name any one thing, in terms of the difference where I was back then, I would say the thing that the hardest thing for me back then, the most difficult point for me was just the feeling of sheer helplessness. Because socializing was always something like I really worked on through middle school and high school. Like I had some of it growing up. So socializing was a strong point, but girls were still just this completely confusing mass of something I didn't understand. And it was so difficult because here I was a smart guy capable of doing, many different things, smart, good grades and all that. But when I got in front of girls, my brain just literally went haywire. It started, I couldn't think straight. I couldn't do anything straight. I had no problem talking to people a lot of normal times. It was, the guy at the bus stop, I could chat him up. But here I was, like this big pile of mush around these girls. And then afterwards, I would wonder what was wrong with me. And yeah, the hardest part, I guess, the most difficult part for me back then was just the feeling of helplessness. Like, I didn't know what to do. I'd come back from an experience with girls just thinking, well, if I was drunk enough, that sometimes went well. If I wasn't, or if I wasn't in the right mood, it often didn't. And I had no idea what the hell was going on, or what I could do about it, or that I could do anything about it. It was just their helplessness. That was probably the hardest part, I would say, for me.
What did you end up doing to sort of get over that feeling of helplessness? Because I know that that's a paralyzing, because I had that same feeling starting into this. You know, I don't even, in fact, I don't really remember the exact moment in which I sort of regained consciousness, you know. I think that it had something to do with when I was reading a book called The Modern Gentleman, which I read years and years ago. And it just sort of showed me that somebody else was going, you know, had a system for this crap, not for attracting women, but at least for interacting, like for being a man. So my focus was a lot around being a man at the time. And I was like, well, you know, like you're saying, social interaction will be good first and then women after that, you know,
mine was like,
you know, mine was like being a man first and then women after that. So I had a big focus on that. But what would you say is the thing that got you past that feeling of helplessness to allow you to have the courage to sort of move forward?
Sure. Well, it's certainly not. It's certainly not the glamorous. It's certainly not the glamorous answer. Unfortunately, the glamorous answer, I mean, being that every single guy, like in his deepest, darkest fantasy, wants it to be like some secret, hidden, like secret that once he knows it, it will give him like the full power of the galaxy that will make like women bow down before him. It's like the classic, so much, it's so funny because so much of like the classic advice on talking to girls that's out there right now is completely based on like this male fantasy, on like a male fantasy of like being in this complete control and like having these like superpowers and everything else. It's a little, you can see the kind of male, you can see the male, what is it, the male presence or the male, what would you call it, the male?
That perspective, you mean? That like that sort of like
influence, dream? Male influence.
That influence, yeah, I think
on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Female influence. But anyway, I get off track. So it wasn't the secret discovery that led to this or that. It was a lot more boring than that, actually.
Well, I'm still curious, obviously.
It was just an experience where I lived in a home filled with a lot of different girls for a summer of my life, between the sophomore and my junior year of college. And it was just living with a lot of girls and getting comfortable with them and just... What I ended up realizing through that experience was that what was happening when I was like turning to goo or whatever, when I was just losing myself and turning into like the biggest idiot I could imagine around girls that I really liked. I mean, I was fine around some girls, but girls that I really liked. What was happening was that I was like anxiety, like fear was creeping in. There's an old saying that goes, "We fear what we don't understand." I think it was maybe Nas or maybe some a little bit further back, but this idea that we fear what we don't understand, it's something that when our mind just can't grasp it or can't wrap our heads around it, that's when anxiety creeps in. And so up to that point in my life, women were very much something that I didn't understand. My only impressions were like my mom and my sister, which were not like the best for instilling like future romantic relationships in my life. God bless them. And you know, movies and TV shows where the geek like stumbles upon some superpower and uses that to get the girl. Right. And so when it came, like this is what I've been watching my entire life. And so like I wasn't Zach Morris. I didn't have a sweet cell phone. I couldn't time out the world and talk into the camera.
Which is very helpful.
I didn't know what to do. And so I was like, I was looking at them as just this foreign species, like trying to figure out what I could do in order to like crack this code. It's like, it seemed like this foreign world almost. Right. And we fear what we don't understand. And that's what was happening to me. I was freezing up. I was going through a lot of what I came to realize were basic scientific scientifications and responses to fear in all situations. And through this experience, through just living with a lot of girls that at first made me very nervous, but once I got to like see them like, you know, vomiting and see them crying, and these girls that at first like I was totally like jittery and a total idiot around, after I saw them like whining and being weirdos and being geeks and being like just absolutely normal dorky human beings just like me and just like everyone I had ever known, and I got to see them in dating situations, like it was really just a very big eye-opener for me. And after that, I started becoming a lot more comfortable around girls because I just kind of understood them a lot better, and so a lot of that fear was removed. And I started getting, I started dating more, and I started becoming a guy in my school around my friend circle that was all of a sudden, quote unquote, good with girls. When for me, it's like, I didn't even notice it until like guys started commenting on it, really. I was just enjoying hanging out with chicks, right, who I would also get romantic with from time to time.
So whenever you were going through this process of being around these women and everything, and you started sort of mapping it out for yourself, I know you came out with a very interesting sort of process that you suggest that your students go through now. Did you base sort of the steps that you teach on some of the things that you learned during that time, or is it something that you learned since then?
Oh, absolutely not. Another question. What I learned right then was, you know, just how I could have fun talking to girls. Mm-hmm. But actually teaching it, actually like putting it in a format for another guy to be able to understand what I was actually doing, I still had no idea what the hell I was actually doing. I mean, I could do it, but it was like riding a bike. How the hell do you describe exactly how you catch the balance to ride a bike? It's just something that you do, and it's something that you can feel. It's like, it's almost impossible to be able to like break down the actual steps of doing it. It's just something that you got to get on the bike and be pushed and done it.
Right.
So that was, that's where I was at when this happened. My, you know, my junior year of college, 2002. Mm-hmm. So, but what really did it, what really started like crystallizing it is after college, you know, I went to corporate America for a while, left that, bartended, but this thing was always like a hobby of me, of mine through it. I'd always just help friends. Like once my friends like saw me as being good, I'd give them advice. And it wasn't great advice. Go say this, go do this. It wasn't anything special. But after I left corporate America and started bartending, I started to get the idea that there was actually, I could actually do something that I enjoyed and something that friends seemed to like, you know, ask me to do anyway. That's something I'd been doing for years, asked me to like, I could do it professionally. Mm-hmm. And it was when I started doing it professionally, when I actually started looking at it, like not just something I was just joking around doing for fun, doing for myself, but I actually started looking at it from this is a professional decision I'm making and I'm working with clients. It was at that point that I really started looking at like, okay, well, what's really going on here? What's really happening? And then it's been, you know, several hundreds of clients later, and watching these guys week in, week out, patterns start to emerge, things start to stand out, and finally, like, the things that had changed, the things that I was doing, the actual things that had changed when I became more comfortable with women, I finally just kind of, like, broken down to the core of it, and then was able to teach it to clients who began getting, like, substantial results from it.
So that's...
Not to brag or anything, not to toot my own horn, I don't mean to do that.
No worries. That's interesting, though, because what it sounds like then is that you got better with women and then you backwards engineered it, like reverse engineered it.
Yeah.
Which is exactly the opposite of what I did.
Yeah?
Yeah, what I did is I took psychology, concepts I learned from psychology, mm-hmm. In psychology class, and I took them out and I used them in the real world. And nice. And they started working, right? So instead of backwards engineering myself, I backwards engineered other people and other psychology, and then applied that to myself,
nice.
Which has allowed me to do what I do. So that's one of the reasons why I think that your take is so much different than mine, in the way that you experience the world and the way that you've broken this down, which is really unique. And then the other, you know, thing about that is that you have this ability still to tap into that natural feeling with women, and you have the ability to teach that natural feeling, which is amazing. And that's really the ultimate goal for any of us in general, is that we have, you know, four. I don't want to mean to like lecture you here, but but we have four stages of sort of self improvement that we go through when we're improving something. And yeah. I didn't create this. It came from psychology.
Sure.
But they traditionally were unconscious incompetence. Have you heard this before?
Yeah. The unconscious incompetence. The four stages.
Yeah, unconscious incompetence, conscious incompetence, conscious competence, and then unconscious competence.
I actually have a version of that I began teaching on my boot camps, just because it was the natural process. I saw guys like learning and taking on new behaviors.
Yeah, absolutely.
As they did, I actually found it kind of matched up. It matched up a little bit with that whole thing originally. It just funny the parallels.
Yeah, well, good true concepts match up with other good true concepts. You know,
so, truth is also the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. So ultimately, though, you know, you go through these different stages, and sort of being a natural is living in this what I call the four line, which is the fourth stage of this process, the unconscious competence stage.
Everything. It's like driving a car. You can do a million different things because it's all kind of happening at the subconscious level.
Right, exactly. And because you've reverse engineered that level, I think you've come up with something that is a direct path to that level, which is really our ultimate goal doing this, is to let go of all the systems at some point and be able just to be naturally good with women, because we don't want to be thinking about this forever. I mean, there's a guy who said that once you put it this way, and I thought this was really smart, that you know, improving yourself is a lot like putting scaffolding on a building. And you put scaffolding up, you make the changes, but what ends up accidentally happening is you make the changes, you know that you're good now, but we all leave the scaffolding up instead of taking it down, which is what we need to do, you know?
Yeah.
We need to tear down the scaffolding of the stuff that we've learned and show people the sort of beautiful building, you know, renovation work that's been done so people can appreciate it.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. You know? It's no good if it's just sitting there behind the glass case. If it's
right.
Not,
no. Right. Totally. So I guess what I'd like to ask you then is, since you've broken this down, I know you have some, and we don't have enough time to get into this really in detail, but I would really love to hear sort of an overview of the different steps that you've seen guys go through in order to get to that stage of being naturally good with women, sort of the stages you've broken down. And just like for the people who are listening now, for everyone who's on this call or listening to this interview, I'd like to, and for myself, I'd love to hear the exact steps that you broke down, so I can, you know, see if they're parallel to mine too, and see if there's anything I haven't thought of yet. But ultimately, sure. would love to hear that sort of step by step process again, briefly, because we don't have time. I know you have like an entire program based on this, and it's sure. Like, you know, several days worth. So
we won't go through the 8-hour fearless program on this call. Unfortunately, we don't have time. I can give you a quicker version of everything, a more brief version. And actually, I slim things down even more so for teaching purposes on these weekends. The way I really see it is that there's just three areas. There's three real areas where guys get caught up.
Hey, Nick, sorry to interrupt you, man, but something's going on with your microphone. I'm not really sure what it is. I couldn't hear anything you just said.
Is that all right? Am I good now?
You're a little bit faint now, but it was just a lot of rustling sounding stuff.
Goodness gracious. How about...
Sorry to everyone who's listening to this.
No, yeah. How's this? How am I sounding now?
Sound good. It was just rustling. I don't know what the rustling was, but I think we're good now. So if it happens again, I'll let you know.
Perfect. Okay. The way that I've been seeing it is that there's really just three areas, three main areas where this fear really creeps in. And so our job, especially when we're working with a guy on one of our weekends, is to attack it at all three areas and make sure that he knows what to do in order to kind of overcome it, in order to get past that, and start replacing some of his negative memories and experiences with more positive ones, so that these changes are lasting, so that when he sees a woman he wants, he'll still get that feeling of excitement, only instead of associating with negative feelings from past negative experiences, he's now going to be associating with positive feelings from the positive experiences that he's replaced them with.
Okay.
And once again, it really happens in three separate areas. The first area being just approaching. And this one can be just as difficult as the entire issue of talking to strangers. I mean, we have the whole like cold approaching women idea, but if you look at a much grander scale, we've been taught to be afraid of strangers since you know we were little kids, and we were told they all had candy with razor blades in it,
which is true.
We've been deathly afraid of any stranger that we've encountered for as long as we can possibly remember it. So not only are we just, is our heart racing when we see a girl, but we've also got this entire issue. It's not only this fear of a beautiful woman, but we've got this fear of strangers in general. And so that's usually the first area that guys get caught up on. And even though there's other places to meet women now, there's, friends sometimes will introduce you and put you on blind dates, and we have online dating and everything. Most guys still want to be able to, you know, when they see that woman in the dance class or at the office party or at the Christmas party or in the grocery store or at the coffee shop that they really want to talk to, they want to be able to go up and start a conversation with her. So that's really the first area that we focus on. And I mean, once again, we're not going to get crazy into details of what's going on here, but usually what happens in these, you know, long story short, what a lot of guys do is when they get nervous, when they start to put value on whomever it is they're trying to talk to, when they're trying to impress, where they're trying to win over someone, they end up putting so much pressure on themselves to have the right thing to say, and they end up taking the reaction far too personally, far more personally than it ever should be. They forget that the other person is usually just reacting out of their own mood, whatever they're in, then their reaction usually has nothing to do with that person. And they try to just put so much pressure that they end up psyching themselves out, or they end up so nervous they look like they just seen a ghost when they walk up and talk to her. Mm-hmm. And she's getting nervous because he just has that awkward, weird expression on his face. So, first things first, what I end up doing with an approach is just kind of releasing the pressure, releasing any kind of tension that the guy is putting on himself. And one of the ways I'm doing that is just erasing any of those notions that used to be there, that the line really matters, that what you say actually makes any difference whatsoever in the reaction that you get. Right. A classic myth, classic lie that's been told to men ever since we were little boys. We always put all the pressure on the line. But when you think about it, when we're actually having a good time, when we're comfortable, and we're starting conversations with strangers, we're not thinking of the most clever thing we can say. We usually just throw out like the first thing that comes to our mind, and sometimes they answer back fondly, sometimes they answer back pleasantly, and sometimes they're not in the mood to talk. And when we don't care about the person, not when we don't care about them, when we don't value the person, when we're not attracted to the person, we say, oh, you know, that person's not in a very good mood, you know, that person's rude, or that person's not very friendly. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, when it's a beautiful person that's acting, a beautiful woman that's acting distant and not very friendly, we say, oh, we didn't have the right line. Oh, our line wasn't charming enough. I wasn't funny enough. I wasn't good enough. We all of a sudden start taking everything personally. So it's just reminding us that when we do get nervous, we have a tendency of falling into that very common trap. Mm-hmm. But just kind of reminding them that there are certainly things you can do. One of the things I like to call them the big three, which kind of run their course throughout everything that we teach. Mm-hmm. Strong, focused eye contact, a warm, expressive smile on your face, mm-hmm. and slow, slow, expressive, with a good amount of resonance, vocal tonality, just strong, masculine, slow vocal tonality. Mm-hmm. If you're doing those three, then you're pretty much doing all you can when you approach. As long as you're, you know, you look like you're a warm, friendly person, strong eye contact showing your confidence, and speaking slowly, that you're not trying to rush or hurry through or trying to impress them or trying to sell them something. As long as you're doing that, you're going to start being very, and you start just taking down all those walls and uncomplicating everything in your mind. You're blown away by the responses, because that's when, I mean, that's really all this complication. That's a big running theme through everything that I teach too, is that all of this complication that's in it, all this, oh my God, I don't know what to say. It's so hard, or it's so difficult, or it's beyond my comprehension to figure out. That's just your fear. That's just lies that your demons are telling you. They want you to believe that you can't figure it out. They want you to believe that it's too difficult for you to do anything about, because that's just going to make you put it off even longer. That's just going to make you say, oh, you're right, I'm not going to approach. Oh, you know what, I'm not going to talk to her. It's making you feel like it's beyond your means, when in fact, when the reality of the situation that I remind guys of is that in fact it's really, really extremely simple. And that it's only our self-doubt, it's only our insecurity that makes it complicated in the first place.
So you're sort of, the way that you've broken it down then is, you know, there are three major things that help you approach and get past this sort of approach phase in the very beginning, when you first walk up, or this approach, let's call it an approach. Not really a problem, but it's sort of an opportunity here.
Sure.
And there are three things, and the things that you mostly focus on that give you the the largest amount of sort of boost with the shortest amount of effort, smallest amount of effort, mm-hmm. would be, you said it was eye con- like solid, strong eye contact.
Focused eye contact.
Focused, you know, eye contact.
Most people think that they're making eye contact when they're just looking at somebody's face. Right. But all through the interaction, I talk about and I stress focused eye contact. When you just, when you kind of look at someone and everything else just kind of melts away for a second, and it just kind of stops the other person in their track. You know that they're full attention. They're not thinking about anything else. Their full attention is completely on you and what you're going to say. And I always say that the defining characteristic, you know you're doing it right when it feels awkward. If you leave an interaction and the thing that stands out is either A, man, that eye contact was serious and heavy, and I, well, it was, it, it had my heart beating fast, and I'm really excited, I can't wait to see this person again, or man, that person avoided my eye contact, I wonder why, maybe they're seeing someone, maybe they're just not comfortable with something, maybe they're just not into me. Mm-hmm. When you leave that interaction with a woman, the first thing that should stand out is you should know by the strength of your eye contact is either I'm blown away or she just wasn't interested. If that's not your first reaction to a conversation you're having, you're not making enough eye contact. No matter how many times you've told yourself that you should make more, no matter how many times you've heard it, no matter how much you actually think you're doing it, your eye contact is not anywhere near it should be if it's not the first thing that's standing out, the first impression that's lasting in your mind after an interaction with that woman. So first things first, focused, emotionally driven connection making eye contact is always, it's, I call it the alpha and the omega, because when you have it, it's all you ever need, and when you don't have it, you don't have anything.
Right.
So yeah, that's a big one for me.
Okay, so the eye contact is, and I've talked to you before, I can definitely see that sort of seeping in through your natural interactions.
Oh, and I didn't even give you the dirty side of it, Josh.
Luckily for me, I didn't get the dirty side of it.
You did not get the you're doing things in my body side of the eye contact.
I don't want to see your brown eye contact.
Double-edged sword. double-edged sword. We teach that too.
Okay, good. Yeah, well, that's interesting. No, just kidding. Yeah, awesome, man. So you have... eye contact then was your major focus, and then you also had two other things you said.
Second, a warm expressive face.
Okay, warm expressive face.
Warm expressive face. Basic principle of fearless is that when you get nervous, you tighten up and you tense up. When you're feeling good, you're loose and your face is full of emotion. When our faces are our biggest tool for communication, and even though we fight or flight and we get tensed up when we get nervous. To the woman that we're interacting with, we look like Charles Manson, or we look like, you know, we've got human hair in our closet.
Yeah.
And so we have to, it's like our natural reaction to tense up. And if we're in our heads and we're thinking, oh God, what do I say next? What do I do? And we're nervous. Our face looks like that psycho killer. But you have to force yourself to take that physical action and force yourself to make sure your face is warm and smiling and indicative of a human being that's not going to harm the person they're talking to.
Right. How do they go about doing that, though? Like, how would you say, tell someone, hey, this is how you can make sure that your facial expression is warm and inviting?
You know, whatever it takes. When clients I've worked with, I have stood like right in their line of view every single approach they did, and anytime they weren't smiling, I would be standing back there waving them with a smile on my face, pointing to them. And there's been times when I've had to remind a guy, you know, 50, 60 times through the course of a weekend to smile. But by the end of it, you better believe his face looks brighter and more expressive, and girls are like looking at him, and he's making more eye contact than he ever has before in his life. So yeah, how do you do it? You do it. It's how do you start eating healthy? It's not fun. It's not enjoyable. There's no trick. You just start. Well, you can make the meals a little tastier, I guess. So you can it's easier once you start getting smiles back from pretty girls. Like once you start getting the results from girls you like, it starts making those actions a whole lot easier. But how do you do it at first? You grit your teeth and you jump in and you start doing it. The beautiful thing is that the stuff that we teach and these little tiny things make such a huge impact that if your guys just go out and focus on them, they'll see such a difference in the reactions they're getting from the women they're talking to, that they're going to find that motivation to keep focusing on it, even when, you know, there'll always be a natural tendency to fall back into old patterns, especially when we haven't gotten enough sleep or we're frustrated with something. But the more you focus on it, the more you practice something, like with anything else in life, the better you get, the stronger you get, and the more it becomes a habit.
Right. Okay, so that was the second part of that, your warm sort of inviting face, you know?
Yes.
And you sort of went into that. I mean, I really appreciate you going into the detail here, because I know this is something that took you a very long time to figure out. What actually works. So, and then the last thing you said is that vocal tonality, and because we're on an audio, you know, audio interview, it'd be really beneficial, I think, for people to hear an example of that. You know, not like you don't have to talk to me like you know, that anything that'll make me uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
Don't talk to me in a way that makes me want to hang up. But.
I'm not going to be getting sexy. This will be straight, confident. You can use this on anyone. And I don't recommend using a sexy hello unless you and a woman have already made sexy eye contact, exchanged a sexy smile. In that case, then you can give her the why hello. But if you try doing that to a girl and she hasn't warmed up yet, all of a sudden you're a little weird. So I'll spare you my sexy hellos for right now, Josh.
Okay, good. Just warm me up first.
Just warming you up.
but let's say that you have, and one of the hardest things for me to work on personally was my vocal tonality. And the main reason I've found for me is I have a very I was a hyper kid. Mm-hmm. I was very, always acting, always moving, always jumping around, kind of like really fast movements. And when I get nervous, I tend to move faster. And I think a lot of guys do. And so whenever I started doing this, sort of the hard part was to be nervous and stay slow. And I ended up finding a physical trigger that would help me slow down. I never told you this, but so I thought I'd tell you now. I actually found that because I use a lot of hand expressions, like I move my hands around and stuff when I'm talking. Mm-hmm. If I slow my hand expressions down, then I immediately calm down. Mm. So it's really strange. Like I would go really fast. And then if I slowed my hand expressions down, then my voice would slow, would deepen, would be more powerful, and it would slow my entire body down. In fact, I was much more calm as well. So that's what I did to slow myself down. But let's imagine that, you know, that isn't the problem for a guy. Let's imagine that instead of needing to slow down, you know, the guy doesn't know what, they can't say anything, and everything just sounds like, you know? You know, I mean, it's not that you need something to say, but...
Sure.
What would you say is a good way to, no matter what you're saying, to keep that low, powerful, you know, masculine vocal tonality in a way that will, you know, like I said, it doesn't have to be something that's like, you know, like your hand movements like that, something that I sort of figured out for myself, and it works for me. But what would you say, just generally speaking, would be a good advice?
Of course. Well, where to even begin? A couple really great points you made. For one, I can fully relate on talking too fast. I mean, I grew up wanting to be the Micro Machines guy. I thought I would be excellent at that. I could do it way better than he could. Whenever I'm teaching, I always tell guys, don't talk to girls like I'm talking to you right now. Do not talk to them in my teaching tonality. I'm talking too fast. I get excited. Mm-hmm. When I get excited, yeah, after I know a girl, she thinks it's a little cute when I get excited. Mm-hmm. But first starting a conversation with a woman, that's not how I'm going to attract her. That's not what's going to make me sexy to her any way, shape, or form. And so I like to make sure that we're starting things off. Like I like to start off with the right tonality, with kind of the right pacing right from the get-go. And so I have several things that I talk about that kind of get guys pointed in that right direction.
Could you as you're telling me about this, could you maybe use the sort of pacing as you're doing it?
Oh, I couldn't teach you without. Yes, I will not be using my awful teaching pacing. That will not attract any woman whatsoever. This is not how I talk when I talk to girls, because it would not get them attracted to me.
Right.
When I get nervous, sometimes this is one of the first things I snap into. So what I tell guys is, what makes for good vocal tonality is a couple things. The biggest one is probably that pacing. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about exactly how I have guys start out, I'll show you exactly how I lead in with that pacing.
Okay.
And the other biggest things are is one, are you speaking loud enough? If it's one, if aside from the pacing, just the guy running in and talking way too quickly and just like blah, 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 and barely getting their attention before he's rambling out there. The second biggest problem I see is guys just not speaking loudly enough. Mm-hmm. And the girls go, huh? And the guys are like, oh man, they don't like me. When in fact, it was just because they couldn't hear you. Right. So simply talking in a loud enough voice, a voice that comes from your chest instead of your throat. And also the final thing is speaking in your lowest octave and speaking in an octave a little bit lower. And so to demonstrate what I do, you have your hand motions. Mm-hmm. What I always do to kind of achieve those two birds with one stone between dropping an octave lower and having my voice louder from my chest and resonating is to simply take a deep breath or two. So that's what I'm going to do right now.
Okay. You can go ahead and do that. In the meantime, I'll just talk about nothing, which is what I'm going to be doing. Sorry, I'll wait.
And so when I take a deep breath, a couple things happen. One, because I have more air rushing over my lungs, it makes my voice louder. It makes my voice resonate more. I'm not yelling, but my voice just has more volume to it. And two, because the air is coming over my vocal cords a little bit more slowly, what that does is that it deepens my voice a little bit. It risks my more masculine tones. And this is how you're breathing. This is how you're speaking when you're comfortable, when you're talking to friends. But it's when you get excited about something, when you get worked up, that you start doing the opposite. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing that I mentioned was my pacing, especially with women. The longer pauses you can drag out into conversation, the more silences, the more tension there will be. And a lot of guys hate that tension. That's another big wall for a guy. In conversations, when that pops up, a big wall for guys is just leaving those pauses. They feel like they have to fill any silence, otherwise they're going to lose the girl's attention. So they immediately jump in there with nervous energy sounds whenever there's a silence. So another thing that we really focus on is dragging out those pauses. So mm-hmm. aside from just taking those deep breaths, the other thing that we do is we always say, we give the guy their first line ever. Guys always say, well, I didn't start a conversation because I didn't know what to say. We take away that objection. You will never have to worry about ever worrying about to say when you work with us, because we eliminate it. Your first line, anytime, always, will simply be the first. Remember to take that deep breath before you deliver it, and then your first line will always simply be this. Hey.
Yep.
There it is.
Yep.
That's, and there's a couple things that go along with that, hey. But first, the hey. Why? Because, first of all, what you say doesn't matter. Time and time and time again. Those three things that we talked about, those things matter. More so than that, we talk about her mood. One thing we talk about in Fearless is the 60-40 principle. Any reaction you get from another human being, the vast majority of it, 60%, will be due to nothing whatsoever to do with you and completely how they're doing today, their mood, their upbringing, their general disposition, their time of the lunar cycle, whatever. That has way more to do with their reaction than anything you can do. So at the bottom of that, the very tip of the pyramid of what does matter is your words. And hey is simply good enough at first. And then once again, so many guys get caught up in that whole, oh, I didn't say anything because I didn't know what to say. You can no longer give yourself that excuse, because that's really all it is. The whole I didn't know what to say thing, it's simply an excuse that you're making for yourself because you don't want to face the reality of what could or could not happen. Because of the fear, because of the anxiety, you start making excuses. And your excuses always sound really, really, really good. They always sound really logical and really convincing, but they never actually get you where you want to go or what you want. So it's time to start rethinking those excuses you're making. Mm-hmm. So hey is the only first line you'll ever need. And then right after that, what I like is a little sneaky. And I actually got this from the guys over at datehottergirls.com.
Oh, yeah, Zach, Rob and all them.
Zach and Bobby. Yep, yep, yep. What they say is, well, they say that they like to say after you say your, well, they say first just tap a girl until you get their attention. They're very aggressive. I like to say hey in a deep manly voice. They like to poke a girl until you get their attention. A little more aggressive. And then the way they put this is then just let the pause drag out for as long as you possibly can. Let it go to intolerable lengths. And once again, the point being is that the longer the pause is, the more sexual tension can build up. I love the idea behind that, and give them all the credit in the world. I don't like to say let the pause go to the extreme length that they go. I say either let it go until either she says something, or until it's just so awkward that you really can't say anymore. But always until you can't take it anymore. But always work to be pushing it back a little bit, and you'll surprise yourself. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Leaving that pause afterwards to make sure, giving them that eye contact, letting them see the warm smile on your face, but just giving them that time to make sure you have their complete attention. Don't continue forward with whatever you were going to say until you make sure everyone is silent, almost giving you that well, we're waiting, what? Because then you know you really have them in full anticipation at that point. One of the biggest mistakes guys make when they're nervous is just blah, 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 rushing forward, saying everything. Hey, I just wanted to come over and say that you guys looked like you were fun. Something I always say is that if you treat your words like trash, they're going to treat them like trash. If you treat your words as if they're valuable, everyone else will treat them as if they were valuable. So when you go up, you sit there and you wait until you have everyone's attention after you deliver your hey, nicely and loud, and loud enough to make sure you do it as well, like a man. And so then you wait, and then after that, in that time period, you now have that's your time when you should start thinking of what it is you're going to say. And in that pause, then you can all of a sudden come up with something. And it's simple. It can be, I just wanted to come say hi, you look cute. It can be a comment on anything. If you're in the grocery store, I hear good things about that cereal. That cereal sounds delicious. It's going to be your eye contact and your smile and the pause that's going to do the real talking in this conversation. I like to say, whatever. If you're at a coffee shop, have you tried those muffins before? They look delicious, even though they probably have more sugar in them than 15, Coca-Colas. Whatever it is that pops into your mind, you're not putting pressure on yourself if it was an old lady and you wanted to know about the muffins there. But once again, it's your eye contact and the smile and the pauses in your voice and the tone of your voice that's really guiding the real conversation that's going on there below the surface. If she looks back with those same eyes, if she smiles back, if she responds back with a slow tonality that shows that she's enjoying this time with you, just like every other time when you naturally comfortably flirted with a girl and you weren't thinking about it and putting pressure on yourself, then you're going to have a good time. And sometimes girls say, they look away and they say, oh, I'm not sure. And they're not into it for whatever reason. But you always give yourself the best chance possible using those three factors. The eye contact that says, I'm a little bit more interested than the muffins. The smile and the facial expressiveness that says, I'm having a great time no matter what. And I might be a little more interested than just the muffins. And that silence in your voice that says, I'm not rushing myself. I'm completely comfortable with this moment and who I am. And I'm just very, very interested in hearing what you would have to say next.
Awesome. That's great, man.
You do those three things on your approach, you're going to be getting way more positive reactions than you ever thought possible. And it demystifies. It takes the hard work. It takes the effort out. It takes the whole putting on a show only to quote unquote get rejected because she was never going to be into you anyway. And once again, keeping things brief. This is what I would say the main crux of what does it here.
Right. Okay. So, first off, thank you so much for sharing that, because I know that that's stuff that you spent a very, very long time sort of breaking down.
My pleasure.
I'm sure it was painstaking to go through that process and reverse engineer it. So
it wouldn't do any good in my head. If anyone's actually enjoying it and getting something out of it, it's well worth my time here. That's for sure.
Right. Awesome. Well, yeah, I really appreciate that very much. And I have we're about to get off the call here in a minute because I have to split, and I know you do too.
Yeah.
But you said you talked a little bit about a couple other stages that are three different stages or whatever. The first one was approach. I didn't really hear the other two. Could you elaborate on those?
Give you the high level. Sure, I'll tell you what they are. I'll just give you the high level of what we're doing in order to overcome the fears associated with. The second biggest one is the second biggest wall is usually happening in conversation. Guys, conversations that just aren't going anywhere. they're boring, they turn into interviews, they just, they're lacking any chemistry, they're lacking any spark. Once again, what happens when, and long story short, what happens when guys are really trying, when they're really putting that pressure on themselves to impress a girl, to get her to like him, guys have this idea, they do that same thing, they do that superhero bullshit of male fantasy of thinking, well, in order to be in a good conversationalist, what that means is that I have to just wow her with how funny and witty and charming I am, and how, and you know, always having the right thing to say, and always just being this incredible, for them being a incredible conversationalist means being the star, being the center of attention. When they imagine being good with girls, they imagine them like standing at the center of all these people, like telling all these jokes that everyone's just lavishing praise on them for, and girls are like swooning and girls are giving them the eye. And you look at what's out there in terms of like modern dating advice that's currently available, and it says, here's a bunch of lines and things you can say in order to be the center of attention, so because that's what it's going to take for the girl to like you. That's what it's going to take for a woman to be attracted to you, when in fact that's the complete opposite of the truth. That's once again male fantasy ego. If you ever read a romance novel, if you ever look at a female romantic comedy, the male of desire is not the center of attention who's like telling all the jokes and lighting up. It's the guy who makes her feel like that. That whole like that whole male center of power is, once again, that's the male fantasy. The female fantasy looks a lot different. The female fantasy, it's not the guy who, once again, who always has the right thing to say, but it's the guy who makes her feel like she's the funniest person in the room. It's the one who makes her feel amazing for her sense of humor and her personality. So one of the biggest mistakes that guys make in conversation is girl says something and she could be like, yeah, and then I did this and it was incredible. And his response with a blank face, because he's just so worried about what he's going to say next with a blank face, he says, oh, cool. So what did you think about that? Just completely ignoring the fact that she said something, like whatever she said was like personal or incredible or whatever. So instead of worrying it's the case of a guy like worrying about where he's going to throw the ball before he catches it. So he takes his eye off the ball and he bungles the play. He's so worried about where he's going to throw the ball, he's so worried about what he's going to say next, he doesn't even catch the ball. So what I like to say is the first thing you should do after a woman says something is not have your witty, clever line of what you're going to say next, but it's to simply show some emotional recognition of what it is she just said. Oh, wow, that's incredible. And to simply do something that in Fearless we call buffer. Just throw out a couple little words that are appropriate to the situation. Instead of just being so worried, you know, actually catching the ball, making her feel as if you were listening, extra points if you were actually listening to what she did before worrying about what you're going to say next. Making her feel like she's the star instead of being so caught up thinking that you have to be. That's conversation. Really, really quickly, I won't even spend that much time. Final one is just escalation. When a girl like shows a guy that she's into him and that she likes him, and a guy knows, okay, now I have to take this somewhere, what do I do? The problem is guys usually don't even recognize this is happening. Guys usually, the biggest hurdle here is that guys think the conversation goes really well and then it starts to die, and the guy thinks, oh God, what do I say next? I don't have enough things to say, I'm running out of conversation. But what happens there is the girl's trying to tell you, when the conversation's going well, the girl's trying to say, hey, I really like you, and you're so nervous, either because you don't even notice the sign, you're trying to worry what to say next, or because you don't want to screw up a really good interaction. You don't push things forward. You don't say, I like you too. And so you end up rejecting her, quote unquote, without even realizing you did so. And so I find that being like the biggest wall that guys face is first just being aware when the opportunity to start escalating is, and then not fancily, not wonderfully, but just like manning up and just crudely, awkwardly saying to a girl, I like you too, in so many words or less. In terms of escalation, I find that to be the third wall. Once we get a guy through all those, he's unstoppable, and he can kind of check this one off the list in terms of his life and according to women.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's for first off, there are a lot of parallels, but you know, with that, and of course,
the truth is the truth, my friend. The truth is the truth, and you're excellent at what you do. That's for sure.
Thank you. ultimately, I think that's you know, probably the most concise and non-fluff driven explanation for this that I've ever heard, which is great. Yeah. Because I hear a lot of course, being in this industry, and being a professional, you know, full-time attraction expert slash coach, whatever, you know, and teaching this for a living, there are a lot of there's a lot of BS out there. I know you know that, which is why you're building what you're building and teaching what you're teaching. Because at some point we realize that, you know, there is actually a need for this information and to be said in the way that we say it, you know.
Absolutely.
And so I understand that you have a program coming out soon. I know you've alluded to it several times, but I don't think anyone's even – I don't think we really properly introduced it. It's called Fearless.
Yes,
and
sir.
It's essentially going over different ways to get over that fear around interacting with – I'm guessing people in general, but specifically women, and how to truly be that sort of – project that fearless personality. I know it's not live at the moment that we're doing this interview, and it hasn't been – produced yet. You guys aren't, you know, done where it's you know, out to the public or anything.
But I
would love to hear a little bit about it, just, you know, if anything, just for me, because I'm curious and I definitely want to get a copy and check it out and see what you have to say about it.
Well, really briefly about the product, I think you hit the main points there. What it is just over my years of teaching, what stood out to me were six main points, six main actions, and of course the truth behind those actions, why it is that we do or don't do the things that we do. But they're the six things that when we're comfortable, when we're loose, when we're natural, when we're confident, they're the things that we do. And when we, you know, expressing and just kind of saying, oh, that sounds great, when someone says something, instead of just waiting for our next turn to talk. Of course, with a lot more elaboration, but it's the six things that really make the difference from when you're on or when you're not, and nothing else. The six things that make all the difference. It's funny when they say, like, you look at the naturals and you say, oh, I want to be like that. But then you go start taking on and learning behaviors that are the complete opposite of what they're doing and what they're actually attracting women with. So it's simply those six actions. And some, you know, and of course, I think the highlight of this is it's me talking about my experience and what I've seen in regards to these actions and the truths behind them. But we also feature some just amazing special guests who come in and lend their brilliance and I would say some of the best thought leaders in this industry today have come together. Josh, you might know something about that. Is that
yeah, I was. I don't know why I was invited to speak on that, but I was. But yeah, there are some brilliant minds that spoke at that event that you did. And again, I just showed up to speak.
You hung out for a little while, but that's what I'm most excited about.
Having
guys like yourself on there, sharing your thoughts and your perspectives. I think that's what really for me makes it something that's exciting and something that guys are going to get a lot out of.
That's interesting, because for me, it's not that other people spoke on it on your product. It's that you broke it down in the way that you broke it down, and that you teach what you teach. So I think that it's sort of a case where, you know, you're so close to it. Obviously, it's exciting to see everybody else come in, but I really think that the value behind this is actually what you teach and what you're giving people and the step-by-step process. I met all the guys who came to the program who learned, and I, you know, because I was there, and their general response was so overwhelmingly positive. I mean, it was so simple. It broke down stuff that was so complicated before in a very, very simple way, which I think everyone can appreciate, and it seemed like it was really, really, really helpful for these guys. I still have guys talking to me about, you know, from that group talking to me about, you know, my speech that I gave, and other people's as well, and just sort of the difference in their lives since they went through your program. So, you know, and then again, this is something that you are able to capture, which is really rare, and be able to sort of bring to a general audience, because I know it's really expensive to come to live programs often, and not everybody can do it. You know, you got to take time off work, you got to travel, you got to stay in a hotel, you know, you got to get around in a cab, then you got to pay for the program on top of it. It's just a really big you know, investment for people. So I think this is something that has been long overdue, sort of a way for you to reach your message to the rest of the people who can't travel over the world to come because they don't have that opportunity. So, you know, I really appreciate it. I really had a great time there with you, and I also, you know, whenever it does become live, I'll you know, of course I'll send a message to the people listening to this call, to this interview, and let them know that it's been live. So if they do want to check it out, at least like to learn some extra free stuff, they can do that. So I know that you'll have some, you know, some free videos, or, you know, this interview, this audio, this, things like this are very beneficial. I know you love teaching, so I know you'll give a great value.
Oh, sure. And once again, I appreciate you just having me. And you know, the chance to talk, and you coming out to New York and being with us, I had a blast. And everything else, you know, we're just getting started here, Josh. This is just we're both going to be doing this for a lot longer.
I hope so. I hope I don't lose it.
It's always a pleasure.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Nick. Nick Sparks again, fantastic. Has a new program called Fearless, and it's coming out from The Social Man, who's the producer for the production of this product, and you'll be hearing all about it, I'm sure, as soon as it comes out. Everybody and their mothers can be talking about it. So when you do see it, whether or not you grab it from me or from someone else or on your own, just make sure you check it out, and make sure you at least get a sense about what's in it, because I like to present people that I believe have, you know, deserve to have their message, like their message is part of mine and sort of, you know, aligned toward the same purpose, and Nick's you're definitely one of them. So
appreciate that.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much. I know you're busy, so I'll let you split, but I will see you on the flip side here, and thanks again for coming in.
Always great talking with you, Josh. You take care.
All right, you too.
Cheers.